morning, as we come to this part of our worship together, I hope that you will open your Bible and look with me at the book of Acts again this morning in Acts chapter 25 and think about the fact that there are times that we see here clearly set forth in this chapter in the life of the Apostle Paul, especially, that God can discipline us for His own purposes. And many times that does not look like what we were expecting our life to look like. And we cannot help but be impressed as we study through the book of Acts, the amazing growth of the church in the first century. Starting from a small group of the apostles, the disciples of Jesus, the gospel grew not only in the city of Jerusalem, it spread out into Samaria and Judea, and eventually was carried out through the missionary journeys of the Apostle Paul and Barnabas and Silas and Timothy throughout the known Roman world of that day. In an amazing short amount of time, and now that even as we see the Apostle Paul sitting in prison for 2 years, we know that the church was still growing and having a powerful impact upon the first century world. And sadly, we don't see that happening today. There are many reasons for this. I'm convinced that the church is not functioning today as God teaches that it is designed to do. And that is to be the support, the pillar and ground of the truth, upholding the truth, and is to be a light in the world, shining to those around brightly, so that the world is impacted and influenced in a way towards the will of God and salvation that simply does not seem to be happening as it ought in the world today. As we see our society crumbling around us, we have to take a look at ourselves and ask the question. The difficult question is any of that due to the fact that we as Christians and as the Lord's church in our generation today have not fulfilled the purposes that God had set for us? And that have we, as we have spent so much time watching television and spending time on our phones, on the internet, how much of it is true that we have failed to grow into the likeness of Jesus Christ and have in fact become more and more accommodated to the ways of this world? As the Bible says in Romans chapter 12, that we are to be not conformed to this world, but to be transformed by the renewing of our minds, that we may bring forth the true will of God in our lives and in those around about us. And we are to be having an influence, we're to be having an impact, but it seems that that has failed and that we are now witnessing the results of that in our society, as the Bible certainly teaches that what we sow, we will reap. And we're beginning to see those things more and more happening in our society, where the foundations that have made our nation a great nation and have provided the world's greatest experience of freedom and prosperity are coming to an end and may have come to an end that may not ever be recoverable. But the Bible teaches us that God disciplines nations and He also disciplines His own children. Now, discipline is never something that is pleasant. As we can remember of thinking of those times when our parents had to discipline us, it wasn't a pleasant thing at the time, but now as we look back upon it, we are able to look and see that that may have been some of the best things that happened to us, as that we were blessed to have parents who, when we needed correction, they disciplined us in a loving way, and it helped to bring us up to a point where we can be well-functioning adults in our lives. The Bible teaches us that God does this in our lives And that sometimes as we look at the events that are taking place and the circumstances that are happening currently in our lives, we sometimes are questioning the fact that why is God allowing this to happen in my life? Why is God allowing us to have all of these trials and hardships that are facing our nation today? Well, when we look at the Bible, I believe we can find the answers to many of those questions if we're willing to accept them and if we're willing to consider them, because Jesus, here in John chapter 15 in verses 1 and 2, He said, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser." And Don was reading some of those statements this morning where Jesus compared Himself. He said, "I am," and He used a number of illustrations, but He said, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser." But then, now notice He said, "Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, He takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, He prunes, and that it may bear more fruit. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, so will you be my disciples." And that is skipping down into verse 8 there at the end. But nevertheless, we see the message that Jesus is giving here to His disciples is the fact that God, in order to help us become more fruitful in our lives as we serve Him, sometimes prunes the branches. And He has to work on us in ways that might be even painful at the moment. When you think about the fact that we go out every year, or we should, sometimes we don't get it done, but pruning our rose bushes, pruning some of the other plants around our home, and we actually take and cut off whole sections of the plant, knowing that this, in the long run, is going to be helpful and the plant is going to come back and be much more vibrant and fruitful after this process is completed. But we take our pruners and we go out and we start snipping and cutting, and by the time we're through, we have pruned it down to a smaller level. But then when spring and summer comes, it comes out and it is beautiful once again. The Bible is telling us that God is doing that in our lives to those who are already bearing fruit. And sometimes as Christians, we look at our life and we think, "Well, I am a faithful Christian. I am doing everything that the Lord wants me to do. I'm coming to service on Sunday morning. I am here and partaking of the worship and things of this nature." And yet the Lord says that He prunes us so that we can become more fruitful, that this may not be all that He had in mind for us, is to simply come and meet once a week on the first day of the week. The Lord might have something far greater in mind for that, for His church, than just a narrow set of rules that we come and we go through certain acts of worship, and then we say a dismissal prayer, and we all go to our homes until the following Sunday comes around. The Lord is pruning us in our lives, not that He is punishing us. He is actually loving us and helping us, as it was true with our parents, that they wanted us to grow and become something more than just couch potatoes who thought that the world belonged to them. They wanted to teach us that we had responsibilities in life. And so from time to time, they came and they applied discipline. And as a result, we became better people. The Lord is doing that in our lives today. And sometimes when we're saying, "Well, why is this happening in my life?" we might ought to consider this is part of God's pruning process. And He is doing this for the reason that He loves us, and He wants us to go beyond further than where we are comfortable sitting in the pew week after week. And as it was true when I was growing up and when my parents were growing up, the Lord's church was known as a people who knew their Bibles. And they had that reputation throughout the community that if you wanted to ask a Bible question, you could go and ask a member of the Church of Christ. They could find the Bible answer for you. Sadly, it's no longer that way today. because, as I say, we have not been following and teaching and studying our Bibles diligently and seeking to thereby grow in the grace and knowledge of Jesus Christ. And too many of us have, whether we realize it or not, we have begun to conform more and more to the ways of this world. And when we look and see what's happening in our society today, those are some of the results of what has simply taken place from the results of the way that we have created a spiritual vacuum in our lives. Now, as we look here into the book of Proverbs, we see that the wise man here, he prepared us for this, and he said, "My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest his correction." Because that is what our reaction tends to be. That why is this happening in my life? I don't like this. This is not how it should be. So we despise the correction of the Lord. And he says, do not do that, nor detest his correction. Why? Because whom the Lord loves, he chastens, just as a father in whom he delights. Now, what I want us to see this morning is that this is what was happening in the life of the Apostle Paul. As we began looking in Acts chapter 25, the Apostle Paul is sitting in prison in Caesarea. And he has been in prison now for 2 years of his life. He is the Apostle of Christ. He is the one that has been called to be set apart to the gospel, to take the gospel out into the world. And keep in mind the fact that we are only at this point in time that we are studying here this morning, around the year 60 AD, and that this has only been a few short 30 years or so since the day of Pentecost, and the Lord's work is certainly not done. He is the apostle of Christ to the Gentiles, and yet, where is he? He is sitting in a prison, and he has been sitting in this prison languishing here for now over 2 years. Why? Because the Roman governor, Felix, who was wanting to do a favor to the Jews, when he was recalled to Rome for his own shortcomings as a governor, he left the Apostle Paul in prison rather than releasing him, as he already had been able to determine the Apostle Paul has not done anything crime worthy of imprisonment or death. And yet, what did he do? He goes off and leaves the Apostle Paul sitting here in prison, and Paul is still in that prison 2 years later. Now, as we come to Acts chapter 25, we see that a new governor has been appointed, and his name is Festus. As you're studying the book of Acts, it's important for us to pay careful attention because you have a lot of names here. I think I read in one occasion that there was over 150 names in the book of Acts of different people that Luke records here in his account. And here in Acts chapter 24, we have the Roman governor is Felix, and he is there for at least these 2 years after the Apostle Paul gets sent down here and is being held as a prisoner. He is now recalled to Rome, and a new governor, Festus, comes. And this governor now, and then in Acts chapter 26, even in chapter 25, we're going to read about another Jewish ruler, King Agrippa, who comes down for a visit. So as we begin Acts chapter 25, we see that the new governor, Festus, has just arrived in Caesarea, and he wants to do a good job. So on the third day, 3 days after he comes to become the governor of this province, he travels up to Jerusalem. And this is about a 65-mile trip. He goes up to Jerusalem because he wants to be a good governor. He wants to meet with the Jews. And as he does that, the first thing that they bring up to him, one of the first things that they bring up, is we have this prisoner, Paul, that you are still holding over in Caesarea, And we want you to do something about him. He has committed crimes. He has been a stirring up of trouble type of person wherever he has gone throughout the world of the Jews. He has had constant problems that he has created. We want you to do something about it. Now, they had also brought up some other charges that he had gone into the temple and had desecrated in the temple, and other charges that they made against him. But it says they could not prove any of these cases against him. Well, as Felix is the new governor here, it says here that they were asking a favor against him, that he would summon him to Jerusalem. Well, they knew that he was new on the job, and that he wanted, if possible, to be on good terms with the people of his province. So they have him in a position that ask him a favor, and hopefully he will grant that favor. And the favor is that he would bring the Apostle Paul back up to Jerusalem. He could be tried there. But actually, they have still not given up that their plan is to kill him on the way, to assassinate him. They have no intention of putting him on trial. They are planning to simply kill him as he is on the journey coming up from Caesarea. And the high priest and the elders of the Jews, the leaders, they are all in on this plan. So they want him to make a favor, do them a favor, and grant them that this prisoner that has been holding over there, that he would be brought back up to Jerusalem. But Felix is wanting to work with the Jews, no question, but he says no to this request. He says, Felix answered that he should be kept at Caesarea. Therefore, he said, though, let those who have a complaint, or if you want to come down with me, I'm going to be going back down to Caesarea here in just a few days, and you're welcome to come with me, and we will have this hearing, and you can present your charges, and we will see if this man has done any of these things that you accuse him of. So they try to get him to bring Paul over to Jerusalem again, and the Roman governor here says no. He is already here, and this is where the trial should take place. Of course, Festus realized that the last thing we want to do is bring this man back up here to Jerusalem. Is the hotbed of all the trouble that can happen, and we bring him back over here, there's no telling what kind of uproar and riots we may set off here. And that's the last thing that Festus is wanting to do. So he kindly, politely, he says, no, but you're welcome to come back down with me. I'll be going back here in just a few days. And so as we come down to verse 6, we see that Felix keeps his word, and that the Jews do come back there with him to Caesarea. There's a delegation of them that returned with him. And it says, when he had remained among them more than 10 days, he went down to Caesarea. And the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, he commanded Paul to be brought. Now, as we think about this statement, there's actually more here than meets the eye. Because when it says, the next day Felix sat down on the judgment seat. And we think about the implications of that. The judgment seat is a Roman term that is well known in the first century world. What this refers to is that the judgment seat is the Roman seat of judgment, where if you're living in a province like this, you are brought there, and this is the high court of the land to decide a case like the Apostle Paul. So it's sitting on the judgment seat. Now, think about the implications of that when we turn over to the book of Romans and we look in the Bible in Romans chapter 14 and verse 12, 10 through 12. He says, But for we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. For it is written, as I live, says the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess. So then each one of us will give account of himself to God. Now I believe that there cannot help but be a connection to those two things. That you had here in the first century in understanding the judgment seat. What does that mean? That means the Roman court where cases are going to be decided. And you go before the judge and he rules on the case. But we are all going to be sitting before the judgment seat of Christ. And we must all give an account of ourselves to God. So this is a thought that ought to be resonating in our hearts, that one day we are all going to do this. We're all going to stand before Christ, before the judgment seat of Christ. And so the Jews here do present their charges again against the Apostle Paul. They laid many serious complaints against Paul. The Jews who had come down from Jerusalem, which they could not prove. And so 2 years has gone by, and 2 years previous, they had many serious charges, which they could not prove. Now they bring them up again, serious charges against this man. He's done serious charges that we have against him. We have a lot of complaints about this man, which they could not prove. So in a court of law, you have to be able to prove the charges that are presented. We understand that. And that was true in the Roman court of law. Now Paul, at the close of when they had made these charges, the Apostle Paul, which he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar, have I offended anything at all. The Apostle Paul is very calm. Keep in mind that the Apostle Paul is composure within his life. He has Christ in his life. He stands up here very calmly before the Roman court. And they are very agitated. He's done all of these things. He's this, he's that. And they can prove none of it. The Apostle Paul simply stands up and he said, neither against the Jews, nor against the Romans, nor against the temple, have I done anything all at wrong. I have committed no crime. That's his very calm response that he makes. So now we see that two things are happening here in the life of the Apostle Paul. And I want us to think about these as God is disciplining us, and as the Apostle Paul was going through a time of discipline in his life. By discipline, I'm saying, why is he sitting here in a Roman prison for 2 years? Why isn't he released so that he can go out and continue preaching and bringing people to Christ? He's having to understand discipline is taking place. He is being pruned. He is being made a better man from this for more fruitfulness and usefulness for Christ. But the first thing, he's going through a prolonged delay in his life. Secondly, false accusations are being made against him. He's being attacked. He's being called these things that none of it is true in his life, and yet he's having to endure all of these things. He is a prisoner, and it is dragging on and on. But Paul is remaining very calm, very patient. He's saying none of these things are true. Because why? The Apostle Paul knows in his mind, the Lord has already told him, you are going to testify for me in Rome, Paul. I have a plan for you. You are going to be in Rome and you are going to testify for me. Paul knows this. He understands this. He trusts God. So in spite of all these things happening in his life, the Apostle Paul remained very calm and composed. And when he speaks with wisdom and with truth that is very powerful. There are some people like this, that they speak very quietly, they speak very calmly, and yet when they speak, it's powerful, and what they say is heard and felt by everyone present, because they speak with wisdom and with truth. That was the Apostle Paul. Now, something very unusual happens at this point, because Festus, it says again, wanting to do the Jews a favor, answered Paul, and he said, "Are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and there be judged before me concerning these things?" And it's very unusual for a judge like this to ask the accused what they want to do. When have you ever seen that happen in a trial? The judge stops the trial and he looks at the accused prisoner and he says, "Would you like to do this?" You never see that. And yet, Festus, he actually asked the question to Paul because he is wanting to do the Jews a favor. The charges have been presented. There's no proof. It should be dismissed at that point. But why not? Because he wants to do the Jews a favor. He knows that if he releases the Apostle Paul at this time, there's going to be a riot in the streets of Caesarea. They're going to be burning buildings. They're going to be, "We need justice. We need justice." He doesn't want to come in and be the Roman governor, and within 10 days that he arrives to be the governor, they're having rioting in the streets all over again. So even though he knows that the Apostle Paul is innocent, he is suggesting to him, "Would you like to go up to Jerusalem? And I will go with you. I will hear your case. I'll make sure you get a fair hearing." The Apostle Paul says, "No, absolutely not." Paul said, "I stand at Caesar's judgment seat where I ought to be judged. To the Jews I have done no wrong, as you very well know. For if I am an offender or have committed anything deserving of death, I do not object to die. But if there is nothing in these things of which these accuse me, no one can deliver me to them. I appeal to Caesar." The Apostle Paul understood his rights as a Roman citizen. And so he's asked the question. He understands what's happening here. Festus is playing the politician, pure and simple. Rather than ruling on the case, and perhaps in the judgment of wisdom of God who is there, and the Apostle Paul knows this, God is overruling the scene. Perhaps it's better that he doesn't get released from the courtroom, from the prison here in Caesarea. Once he goes out on the street, it's fair game. The Apostle Paul knows they want him dead. And for him to be released from prison, he's got to get from point A to point B. And he may not be able to even do that in this hostile environment that he has in the middle of here. He's done nothing wrong. But they want him to be killed, and they're willing to bend the law in order to get what they want. They don't care about those things. So he says, "I appeal to Caesar." And he understands that that is a right of any Roman citizen that is accused of a crime, anything short of a murder charge that is provable, that they can appeal their case to Caesar, and they will be taken to Rome, and they will be tried there, not necessarily by Caesar himself, but by the highest Roman court that is in the empire. Like going to the Supreme Court, a Roman citizen can appeal to that and they will be transferred over, taken to Rome, and they will get a fair hearing that way. So Paul says, I appeal to Rome. I appeal to Caesar. And so Festus looks at his advisors and they say, fine, that's, and he says, so you have appealed to Caesar you will go. Now, Paul here is undergoing unfair treatment. It's obvious. He is being put on hold here for a long time. He's sitting in a Roman jail cell. He is being false accusations made against him all over the place. And the Roman governor is more interested in his political career than he is in executing and carrying out actual justice. The Apostle Paul says, I appeal to Caesar. And think about him, the boldness of the Apostle Paul, standing in this Roman court, and here he is a very humble-looking prisoner. He's actually got his prison chains on, as we learn later, when he is brought out here from these prison to appear before this. And yet he is so bold that he looks Festus in the eye here, and he says, if I haven't done any of these charges, then no one can transfer me over to them. I appeal to Caesar. He knew his rights. And sometimes today, we as Christians need to be more involved in political events that are happening and be better educated at what's actually happening in our society than to simply sit back and say, well, I don't like to get involved in those things. Those are, you know, those aren't pleasant to me, and I'm not really concerned about those. We need to be better informed in what our rights are by the Constitution of our land, and we need to be more concerned to try to defend them from being taken away from us. There's an election coming up on Tuesday, and it's only the primary election, but listen, we need to be concerned who we cast our ballots for in these elections. And we need to look at that carefully, because sometimes even within the party that you think is the right choice, it may not be the right choice. You need to understand, what do the candidates actually advocate for? We have an election coming up in November, very important election in our nation. And one of the candidates is Senator Patty Murray, and she is being challenged by Tiffany Smiley. And I highly recommend that we all vote for Tiffany Smiley in this vote, because when you listen to Patty Murray on her commercials, one after the other, what does she say? Vote for me, I will make sure your rights to an abortion are never taken away. That is the number one issue that she is campaigning on, to advocate the continuing of a safety zone here in the state of Washington, that abortions will continue to be legal as long as she has anything to say about it. So I recommend that we do not vote for her. Vote for Tiffany Smiley. That is not speaking for the church. That's on me. That's my personal viewpoint that I am sharing with you this morning. But we need to know about the politics of our day. And we need to understand our rights that we have. And the Apostle Paul did that. And so Festus, he says, you've appealed to Rome. To Rome you shall go. Now, the next thing that happened is, though, that his case is still on hold. Nothing has been decided at this point. And now Festus realizes he has a problem, because Paul has appealed to Rome, and yet he doesn't have anything to write in the letter that he needs to send. He's going to be sending a prisoner to be appealed to Caesar, and he's supposed to write a letter. And he has nothing to put in the letter. He doesn't know what crime to put and that he is even charged with. So he may have thought, well, this is great. He's out of my hair now. He's going to be taken to Rome. great. I'm glad it's off my hands. Kind of like Pontius Pilate. I wash my hands of this case. But he still has a problem because he has to write the letter. And he doesn't know what to say in the letter. But all of a sudden, here comes King Agrippa and Bernice. They come down for a visit. Now, this is a visit that is politely expected of any new governor. That they are a political factor in part, a small part of Galilee and Perea. And so they come down for a visit. And they stay for quite a while here, getting to know the new governor, welcome him to the country, and things like that. But during this stay, it eventually gets around to the conversation, I have this prisoner here that... quite honestly, I am at a loss to know what to do with this prisoner. He is this man named Paul, and he is being accused by the Jews of a lot of complaints that they have brought up about him. But honestly, when I have looked into these and heard their case that they have made, I don't find that he has done anything to break the law, especially the laws of Rome. What I found, he said, is that this is a question about their own religion, and it has to do with this man that was named Jesus that is dead, but Paul says he's still alive. And that seems to be the crux of the issue of what this whole thing is about, is over this man that died, and Paul says he's still alive. So he's asking for help here. He's saying, I know that you are knowledgeable in the Jewish laws, and you're much more knowledgeable than I am in this. He's basically is asking him, would you mind looking into this and offering your advice on what I should do? And he makes a statement in here, though, that I think is interesting to make, that he said, as he was describing the case to Agrippa, he said, it is not, when the Jews came and spoke to me, he said, I told them, I answered them, it is not the custom of the Romans to deliver any man to destruction before the accused meets the accusers face to face and has opportunity to answer for himself concerning the charge against him. Now that's the hallmark of our laws that we still follow today in a criminal case. You're innocent until proven guilty. And once we do away with that simple fact of justice, how justice is determined, that the person is innocent until proven guilty. And I have to say that that is going by the wayside in our criminal justice system today. And it's happening with Christians. Because many times today, Christians are judged to be guilty even though they are innocent because of who they are and what they believe. They're considered to be guilty. And sometimes cases today come up, and before it can even go to court, it's already decided in the media he's guilty. It's put on TV, on the internet, 7 days a week, 24/7, and it hasn't even come to the case to court yet. And Festus is absolutely correct here in pointing this out to the Jews, that we have a system that we follow, and we do not make any exceptions of that, that a man that is accused guilty, he has the opportunity to face his accusers face to face and answer them. And that had not been done in the Apostle Paul. And so once again, he should have released him. He should have said, You have nothing against this man. I've heard this case. You have nothing. And let him go at that point. So the Roman law was a good law. It was innocent until proven guilty. And he said, all I can see from this, this is about religious matters that they have in their own religion. It's nothing to do with Roman law. And yet, here I am, between a rock and a hard place. He's appealed to Caesar, and I have to write a letter to Caesar to explain what the charges are, and we actually don't have any charges against him. So what am I supposed to do? How can you send a man to Rome as an appeal to Caesar, and you don't even have any clear charge against him? How can I do this? And yet that's where he was. So Agrippa says, well, he said, I would like to hear this man myself. And he said, tomorrow you will hear him. Now, the end of chapter 22, we're going to kind of roll that into the lesson next week, because that is where they come and they are all in great pomp and ceremony. And it's this big, huge production. And the Apostle Paul here is given the opportunity to speak with King Agrippa himself. And let King Agrippa, who is knowledgeable among the Jews, whereas Festus, he does not know anything about any of these things. He is new on the job. He has no understanding of what has happened. He just has heard about this man, Jesus, for the first time. He knows nothing about the facts of the case. And so he's at a loss. Agrippa says, well, I would like to hear this case, but when we think about it, what is the Apostle Paul in all this? He is just a curiosity item that is going to be standing out there almost like for the entertainment of people. Oh, well, we don't have anything better to do today. We'll bring him in and we'll let us hear this case. Maybe that will be kind of an interesting story to listen to. Here he is, the Apostle Paul, the Lord's chosen vessel, and yet he's in prison. His case is prolonging, going on and on indefinitely. He's supposed to be out there preaching the gospel. He can't do that. All sorts of false accusations are being made against him unfairly. The Roman governor has made it clear that he's more interested in pleasing the Jews than he is in actually deciding this case. He still doesn't have anything to write in the letter. And yet, it's still uncertain, still up in the air, what's going to happen with the Apostle Paul. Now, compare that with your life, my life. Whenever we find ourselves going through difficult circumstances and we are facing the same type of questions in our mind. Why is this happening? Why is all of this taking place in our life? It's easy at times like these to doubt our value in God's eyes. But the Apostle Paul, throughout all of this, he held faith fast to his faith. He never lost his faith in God. He actually believed and understood God has a purpose in all of this. He has promised, I'm going to be in Rome, give witness there, and I don't know how it's all going to unfold, but I'm trusting God. So Paul made it through these trials, and that shows us we can also. We can get through these things if we remain strong in our faith, if we trust God, if we understand that sometimes God is pruning. He's trimming off the branches in your life. There's little things here and there that needs to be trimmed off so that you can become more productive rather than just being a bench warmer or fulfilling a few minor obligations once a week. The Lord has bigger plans for all of us. The Lord wants us to make an impact on this world that we're living in, that we actually influence and change and transform the society around about us. And we think, well, we're only a few people. How can we do that? It's because the Lord is working through us. That is how it can happen. You have to have faith in God's ability to work through us as His vessels in His kingdom. And all of this, what does it prove? It proves God loves us, that God cares about us, that sometimes He disciplines us. He puts us through hard times. Hey, you have to pay $6 when you go to the gasoline now. How do you like that? We've been sitting back in this prosperity for how many years? And sitting in our comfy chairs watching TV all the time. On our phones. Now we're having to pay $6 for gas. What happened? Guess what? God is disciplining our nation for its sins. And He's disciplining us that, hey, we need to wake up. We need to get more active in our lives, in our service. There's things that we need to cut out of our lives so that we can be more dedicated and more submissive to the will of God, that He can use us to impact the lives of other people. And it's going to develop our character and help us to grow and become what He means for us to be. I apologize, we've gone a little over time. Thank you for your attention. We're going to stand and sing the invitation. If you're subject, we invite you to come.